go ahead and we'll get started. We'll start with prayer. Father, we are thankful for a good day of fellowship with the saints. We're thankful for this time we can gather and see what your word says about finances, about money. And Lord, help us to be good stewards of what you've blessed us with. Encourage us today and help us as we analyze our own present situations. And we thank you for this time. In Jesus' name, amen. I don't even really know how to describe it other than we're going to have to kind of do this as a flyover, because the topic of money, finances in the Bible is vast. Thousands of verses that have application. And so I'm going to try to do it justice. I'm going to try. We're going to hit some scriptures. We're not going to cover everything. Obviously, there's going to be a lot of points that could be made in the financial realm. We're going to hit some scriptures, but I want to jump because we're limited for time. We have an hour today, hour next week. I want to jump headlong into the practical, day to day. Nuts and bolts, what we can do. And if you don't have financial issues, you probably will someday. Okay? It is pretty universal in how people can be plagued by it. So I guess to start, I was going to say, and this is, you're not going to like to hear this in a church, but money is important. Money is important. And money is not good, and money is not bad. It just is. Money just is. And so have you ever heard somebody say, well, I don't care about money? I'm sure you've heard that. It's like they're trying to sound all pious and everything. The reality is everybody does, and if they don't, they'll be made to care at some point. When they get cold, when they get hungry, money will become very, very important to them. But like I said, it's not evil. It's neither good nor bad. It just is. But the Bible says something about money that is evil. What is evil? The love of money. Okay? The love of money is, in fact, evil. It is the root of all kinds of evil. You can see that in 1 Timothy 6, and verse 10. And if hopefully you have notes, notebook, you can take notes, jot some of these scriptures down, look them up at your leisure. The love of money is the root of all evil, or all kinds of evil. The Pharisees were called lovers of money. In the last days, men will be lovers of themselves and lovers of money. Okay? None of us are immune or even exempt from the temptation to, we would never say that we love money, but the temptation to be infatuated with or drawn to or obsessed with money. Jesus said that no one can serve two masters, God and mammon. You'll either love the one, hate the other. You cannot serve God and money. That's in Matthew 6:24. The psalmist says, do not put your hope in wealth. And it says, if riches increase, do not set your hope on them. So I kind of like that, because the longer you live, the harder you work, by every reasonable expectations, riches will increase. But the psalmist says, though they increase, don't set your hope on them. Don't rest on riches increasing. And I think probably one of the most important passages on money and finances in the Bible is in 1 Timothy 6. Verses 6 through 12. I want you to get your Bible out and we're going to read that together. 1 Timothy 6, verses 6 through 12. I want to use this verse to put money into perspective, and then we're going to actually look at some very practical applications. Once we get this settled in our minds, then we can go ahead and proceed. Because just because godliness with contentment is great gain does not mean that we are not going to have struggles in the financial realm. But this is our goal, obviously. First Timothy 6:6-12. But godliness with contentment is great gain. For we brought nothing into this world, and we can take nothing out of it. But if we have food and clothing, we will be content with that. People who want to get rich fall into a temptation and a trap, into many foolish and harmful desires that plunge men into ruin and destruction. I'm going to read that another time. People who want to get rich fall into temptation and a trap, and into many foolish and harmful desires that plunge men into ruin and destruction. For the love of money is a root of all kinds of evil. Some people, eager for money, have wandered from the faith and pierced themselves with many griefs. But you, man of God, flee from all this and pursue righteousness, godliness, faith, love, endurance, and gentleness. I want to read that one verse, one section just one more time here. Some people, eager for money, have wandered from the faith. Think in your life. Do you know anybody hungry for money, chasing money, who in so doing wandered from the faith and pierced themselves through with many griefs? What a sad state of affairs. May it not be for us. Now we're gonna get into some of the nuts and bolts. And I want to, first of all, talk about money not being evil, not being good nor bad. Can be, it's just like anything else, whether it's the internet, whether it's your vehicle, whether it's whatever it is, money can be used for good and it can be used for evil. But I want to, first of all, start with, we have a stewardship of money, of God's purposes in using money. One thing I would stress to begin with is work ethic. Work ethic is very, very important to the Christian. It is a good example. It is a good testimony to have a strong work ethic. And the opposite is also true. I like in Proverbs 6, you know, it says, look to the ant, O sluggard. The Bible, I love that word sluggard for some reason. But look to the ant. He's always busy. I mean, the ant is always going. And the Bible commands lazy people to watch an ant. Surely a lazy person can take a minute and watch an ant, right? Okay. But Proverbs 6, all through the Proverbs. If you want some good reading, just pick up the Proverbs. You don't have to actually fall into the context and find out where it's going. It's just pithy, little, great quips. And Proverbs is full of not only financial, but also aspects for every walk of life. But work ethic. Nobody owes you anything. We must work. We must hustle. We must go above and beyond. All these things are good testimonies as a Christian. And we must do this every day. The term suck up is a pejorative that is used to describe somebody in the workplace or somebody in the classroom who is constantly trying to please the teacher. Okay? And the word suck up, I decided, it's a pejorative that's used by crabs in a bucket. Have you ever heard the expression crabs in a bucket? Okay. Crabs in a bucket is I like to use that illustration because if you imagine a little metal pail of crabs, I mean, it's middle of Illinois. We don't have a lot of crabs running around, but bear with me here. And you fill this bucket full of little crabs. They're going to pile up And then as one gets near the top, getting ready to reach out over the edge and be free, the others reach up, grab him, and pull him down. So that's the idea with crabs in a bucket. It's an expression. Apparently not a very famous expression because nobody in here has ever used it or heard it. So, but anyways, that is the kind of the mindset of people that call another worker or student a suck up. They're trying to, if you are working extra, if you're showing up work, showing up early, helping the boss, doing this, taking on more and more responsibility, the others will come around you and like a crab, like crabs, pull you down to their level. Slow down. We got to keep the pace slower. You're going to get us more workload if we finish too early. This kind of stuff is common fare among workplace and in classrooms. Don't try so hard. Stop being a suck up. And people will try to slow the pace and keep you from excelling. And whenever you excel, you make other people look bad. That's what they're trying to avoid. They want you in the bucket with them. Okay. Finish your tasks early. Instead of worrying about being called a suck up, finish your tasks early and grab another task. And work as unto the Lord. Whether you're a student, whether you are an employee, whether you're an employer. Colossians 3, verses 23 and 24. Work as unto the Lord. Don't fall into their trap because it is a trap. I just wanted to mention at the outset the importance of work ethic. Okay? So, and we may touch on that a little bit later as well. Today, we're not going to explore the ins and outs of everything the Bible says about money because we've only got two sessions. But I do want to hit a couple specific topics, tackle them headlong, and go to the practical. We've got to handle these practically. The Bible actually has a lot to say about money, wealth, finances, and so we're barely going to scratch the surface. The fact that you're here shows that you care about your financial health, your financial well-being. And I know there's several people that want to be here. They can't. Hopefully we'll get the recording to them. But money is a marriage issue. And some of you are not married. Some of you will be. But it is a crucial issue. Number one cause of divorce, money fights and money problems. The number one cause, money fights and money problems. You didn't realize it was that significant, but it is. And the cure to this, the cure to most problems in a marriage, communication. I'll let you write that, and I'll give you the next one. The cure to this, communication. Okay, the next one is communication. The third one, communication. And the last is also communication. This is the cure. Husbands and wives are in a marriage together. Brendan's up here making good notes. That's good. We want to start you off on the right foot. You are in this together. There is no longer such thing as my money. There's no longer such thing as my money. There's no longer such thing as her money or his money. It's our money. Ultimately, it's God's money. Okay? Let's keep that in view as we go through this. But when you get married, you are not your own. The Bible talks about your body belonging to the other one. Your money belongs to the other one. And so this is very important. And you as a couple must work together to spend the money that he has granted to you by his principles. Many, and I would say most people, have serious financial issues. Most people do. Don't be too proud to ask for help. It's just like anything else. If it's a health issue, you want to get to the doctor early rather than later. Headed off at the pass, that kind of thing. If you think you may need help, you do. It's one of those things. I'm going to read a quote And I'll see if anyone in here knows who said it. My wife, you cannot respond. Debt is dumb. Cash is king. And the paid-off home mortgage has taken the place of the BMW as a status symbol of choice. Yes, ma'am?
Dave Ramsey.
That would be Dave Ramsey, yes. So I am going to be giving a lot of his philosophies. Okay, these are proven methods. I do endorse a lot of what he... Now, granted, his... I just want to give attribution right up front. So somebody, if they're listening to this online, they're like, yeah, that sounds good, but it sounds like you ripped it off. I ripped it off. I ripped it off. Okay, it's stolen. Anything good you hear is probably not mine. Okay, but debt is dumb. Cash is king. And the paid-off home mortgage has taken the place of the BMW as a status symbol of choice. Okay, I think it's good. But Dave Ramsey is a believer. He has a, you know, certainly different theological philosophies than us, but that you can still eat the meat and spit out the bones. Lots of good counsel. I do recommend his books. I do recommend his podcast. His podcast, basically, if you haven't heard it, people call up, it's a call-in show, and they tell him their financial problems, which are real, day-to-day, real-life problems that you go through and I go through, and he helps them through and helps walk people to a debt-free life. That's the sum total of it, okay? So he refers to it as God's and grandma's ways of handling money. God's way of handling money. And so I wanted to, let's go ahead and jump into the big problem that a lot of people get buried with, which ends up causing them tremendous harm throughout the rest of their life, is they get buried in debt early on. Okay? And, well, I don't want to get too far ahead of myself, but one of the things that Dave Ramsey says is your greatest wealth-building tool is your income. Your greatest wealth-building tool is your income. And this little analogy I came up with, this is not Dave Ramsey's, by the way, this is Will Anderson's. Okay, that's all I have to offer today. But it's pretty farmy, too, so you'll know it's fine. Okay. Imagine trying to drive your pickup. You have a truck, okay? You're driving your truck up a dirt hill. Okay? I'm sure a lot of you have done that at some point in your life. Now, your truck is you. The higher your income, the bigger your motor. The higher your income, the more aggressive the tread on your tires, okay? So all of us have a different truck. Some of your truck may look like a little Mazda with a muffler dragon. You know, we've all been there, okay? But this is your truck. This is your financial. This is your income, and you're heading up a dirt hill, okay? Your debt, every debt you take on is like coming up behind that thing and onto the hitch, you're hooking a weight, okay? One or two weights you feel like you can handle, right? So you're still progressing up this dirt hill, and every debt you take on, it's another big weight. The bigger the debt, the bigger the weight. And so before long, you have stopped the forward progression of your income, your truck. And even though the wheels are still turning, you start going the other way. The wheels are turning forward, but you're sliding back down. You're being pulled back down the hill by the debt load that you're carrying. And that is, I think, a very accurate picture of what can happen in the financial realm, even in a well-meaning family. And there is a lot of cures, and we are going to discuss that, but I think that really gives life to the mean spinning your wheels. You're getting up, you're going to work, you're spinning your wheels, and it just seems like you're falling backward, farther and farther and farther behind. And so this is a place... this is the place where you need to stop and assess the problem. Okay? You don't quit work because you already got the weight on there. You're just going to free fall from there. Okay? You don't shift to a higher gear, and it really doesn't even matter if you increase your income because you still got the same weights. Okay? You may be able to help yourself out just a little bit, but your problems are not going to go away with a raise. A lot of people think that, don't they? If I could just make another $1,000 a year, my life would be easier. If I could just get my boss to give me a raise, all these different problems would go away. A new career is going to help me. It's not going to happen. Have you ever heard the expression, expenses always rise to meet income? Okay, it's true. No matter what you make, if you make more, you're going to find a way to spend it. The expenses are always going to rise to meet your income. And so using this analogy of the truck with all these weights dragging in the dirt behind you, you got to shed the weight. You got to start dumping the weights off if you're going to make it up. And as I've thought about it, this analogy really works out well, because there is going to be a point as you shed weight and your truck starts moving forward again and you start getting more and more steam moving, one day you're going to be at the top. And I'm not talking about to be the richest so you can walk around and brag. I'm saying you're going to have no longer have that pull and that gravity pulling you back, but you can get your head above water and look out and take a deep breath. And then maybe as retirement comes, you can start to coast a little bit. Okay, these are very important things that we as younger folks need to actually see today, and not on the backside when it becomes too late. Turn to Proverbs 22, please. Proverbs 22. Proverbs 22:7. The rich rules over the poor, and what does it say? The borrower is slave to the lender. The borrower is slave to the lender. I have a highlighter right here. Hope you have one yourself. The borrower is slave to the lender. If you would really like to get a firsthand glimpse of what financial slavery is like, start taking out loans. Get you a car note. Get you a big mortgage. Get you about 15 credit cards. Start buying everything you want. And you'll realize what it becomes to have something, a master ruling over you. The borrower, a slave to the lender. Now let's go ahead and get started, because I'm limited on time. And I do want you guys to formulate some questions. Well, at the end, we'll have a little bit of time where you can throw out some questions, and if I don't know, I'll make something up. And if I do know, I'll answer. And if I really get stumped, I've got Hamster over here, CPA, and I've got my wife, a banker. And honestly, to be perfectly honest, Kim would be better at presenting this than I would, because she has to help so many different people through their challenges of life. And so you're getting kind of a second-class presentation here. But I want to get right into getting out of debt, because it's that important. Just like the truck analogy, you may feel like, even if you're just inching up the hill, you may feel like you're making progress. When in actuality, you're holding yourself back. You are blowing it for long term. You're really messing up. You know, you may have, I get so tickled. You see some of these young kids. They get out of college, and they get a good job. Well, when you get a good job, your classmates, you're going to have a reunion in 5 years, right? You can't go to a reunion driving an old beater. So they'll go out and they'll buy them a fancy, you know, $70,000 SUV, and they just feel so proud of themselves. And everybody around them that's a little bit older, a little bit wiser, laughs at them. Like, you have no idea. And I heard Dave Ramsey say this the other day, and I thought it was so funny. He says, well, he doesn't, unless you can pay cash for a car, he says, you have no business buying a new car. He's got some rules that are very right, but most of us don't abide by them. But he says, when you buy that new fancy car, and you drive out of the parking lot, and you go through the little gutter along the street there, and you hear that, dum, dum, he says, that is the value of your car nosediving. As soon as you leave that dealer's parking lot, that $35,000 car just dropped 10 grand just by driving it out on the road. Okay? He says, unless you are a millionaire, you cannot weather that kind of loss in your life. And so, like I said, some of these things are very tough. They're countercultural, but we'll get into that in a minute. But We're gonna go right after the debt. We're gonna go right into figuring out a way to dump debt so that we can get that truck moving again and getting it progressing up the hill. And I'm gonna say this at the outset. Okay? This should go without saying, but let's go ahead and say it anyways. Avoid stupidity. Avoid stupidity. And I know that shouldn't... Avoid stupidity and pseudo-Christian superstitions. Oh man, I was going to have this pulled up. Avoid stupidity and pseudo-Christian superstitions. 1 minute. You'll have to wait just a second while I pull this up on my phone, but I promise it'll be worth it. Okay? I just want to share with you some of the stupidity that is out there that well-meaning Christians adhere to. Believe it or not, you know, we've all heard this business in the past week about, oh my goodness, what's his name? Just trying to get his next jet. Jesse Duplantis. Okay, it's been all over the news. And the sad thing is, that's not new for him. And, you know, Creflo Dollar was doing that just a few years ago. His fourth one. But, you know, it's just like the world is just now getting wind of this. And those of us that have followed these quacks for so long, we're like, this is nothing new. I mean, there's crazy stupid all over out there. But anyways, here is one of these stupid pseudo-Christian, and when I say pseudo, I do mean false Christian. This is somebody pretending to be a prophetess of God. And I'll just go ahead and play it for you. Yep, hang on a second. Had the wrong volume turned up.
What do you need?
I need money.
Then start creating it. Start speaking about it. Start speaking it into being. Speak to your billfold. Say, you big, thick billfold full of money. Speak to your checkbook. Say, you checkbook, you've never been so prosperous since I owned you. You're just jammed full of money. You've got pain and disease in your body. Speak to your body. God will create the fruit of your lips.
And that is what I would refer to as, let me see how I wrote it here. Yes, stupidity. Okay? Do not speak to your wallet or you'll be turned into an insane asylum. I will turn you in myself. Okay? This is not of God. It's psychobabble. And it is... I strongly encourage everybody not to turn on the TV and no matter what. But anyways, this is the kind of psychobabble that goes on there. And it appeals to our flesh. This kind of stupidity appeals to the flesh of weak-minded people that don't know their Bible. It appeals to our greed. And it appeals to our laziness. Both are attributes God condemns. Okay? That stuff is nonsense. I don't even know how else to say it. And the other thing I would say is greed. If I tell you guys, picture somebody that's greedy, most of us, and I think our culture helps us with this, most of us are going to picture that beautiful, picturesque house up on the hill with a manicured lawn and a swimming pool and the Circle Drive and all this other stuff. And this guy that's living in a fenced in. I mean, everything, we look at him and say, greedy, he's not sharing. Well, let me tell you something. Greed is all the way up and down the income spectrum. And it's in my heart, too. I hate to even mention this because we probably all know people like this. But if you think the elaborate lifestyle I just described is the best description of greed, I have been to and I'm sure you have too, been to a gas station before. And this guy, who you could smell him before you could see him, comes in. And he has a handful of dollars in his pocket. And he goes up to the register, and he spends every single dollar buying what? Lottery tickets. And just because he's poor, our culture today says, well, he's not greedy. He just got dealt a bad hand in life. No, that's greed. That's just another manifestation of greed in somebody's life. He has a sin problem. This is gambling. He's wanting more. It is greed. We all are tempted to greed, but let's not. Greed is pervasive, and certainly Christians are not immune from the temptation to greed. Okay, now let's get to the nuts and bolts of it. Kitchen table. This is where I'm going to ask my wife to hand out these things here. A few times in this session, I have mentioned that a kitchen table is where things really happen in a life. Okay, so these are some forms that it's kind of a cash flow sheet. This is not your actual budget, but this will help you in preparing your budget. Budget is a bad word, I know, but budget is going to be the word that can save your financial life. Okay. So these things, she actually brought them home to me. These are things that her bank gives out. Your bank will give you financial forms. Believe it or not, and I know the world is all telling us that banks are evil and they're trying to, you know, they're trying to get you down and take your money. But there are people that are trying to help you become successful. And she has to do this in counseling and stuff. So just disregard the bank name on there. It doesn't even matter. But use this form and you can fill it out yourself. Okay, put in your own numbers, and it'll help you formulate your own budget. And basically, the sum total of a budget is you give every dollar you make a purpose. No idle money sitting around, right? Every dollar is going to go towards something. Every dollar has a mission, and basically that way you rule your money. Your money doesn't rule you. Your impulses don't rule you. You don't get a you're less likely to have those impulse purchases. So budget, basically the best way to describe it, get a spreadsheet paper, print off two columns. One side is income, one side is expenses, and list them all. List them all, and there should be a difference at the bottom. Okay, there is a zero-based budgeting software out there that you can do to find out where you can trim back. But these kind of things are very helpful. So as she passes those out, hopefully it will be a good direction for you to do at home at your own family. But the important thing is, prepare a budget. Prepare a budget. And if you don't, you've heard the old phrase, if you aim at nothing, you'll hit it every time, right? If you aim at nothing, you'll hit it every time. And if you don't tell your money where to go before you get it, your money is going to rule you. And you will not have any direction. Next thing you know, you'll be in debt up to your eyeballs. You got to be intentional. You got to be disciplined. And you have to commit to it. Formulate a plan. And the one thing I want to stress is it's not wrong to want some things. Okay? It's not wrong to pencil in something into your budget. It's like, I want this. Okay? I don't need it. I want it. I'll tell you what it is for me. It's McDonald's coffee. Okay? I'll sacrifice a lot of other things, but I want my McDonald's coffee. Okay? Pretty simple request. Okay? It may be your phone. It may be a particular pair of shoes you like to. I don't know. Use your own imagination. Some of you guys like to stop at Starbucks or stop at the donut shop on your way to work. Or I'm not giving up my donut. Okay, fine. Write your donut into the budget sheet. Account for it and tell your money where to go. Okay. Speaking of donuts, this is kind of ironic. If you are physically out of shape, pointing to a stack of diet books that you've read is not going to convince anybody of how to get in shape. Okay? It doesn't matter what you know if you're not putting it into practice. And the same is true with financial knowledge. Knowledge is power, but only if you put wheels to it. Okay? I've read and listened to a lot of really interesting stuff with money, but if you don't put it into action, it's ridiculous. It doesn't work. Get to work and get serious. That's the sum total of it. Get to work and get serious. The sooner you realize your state of affairs, the better off you're going to be. It's like a monetary cancer pronouncement from a doctor. You've got bad problems. If you've got bad problems, you know it. And avoiding the topic is only going to harm you in the long run. Okay. You might have heard or even said to yourself, I or we don't have time to work on a budget. And the reality is, you don't have time not to work on a budget. You're looking at a good, strong half an hour to an hour at the table looking over bills, filling in the forms, which sounds like homework, but it can be fun. And the other thing it's going to do, I almost get emotional listening to on Dave Ramsey's podcast. He'll have people call in and do their called the debt-free scream. These are people that come out of college and they're saddled with college loans. They've got car payments. They've got a mortgage. And next thing you know, that truck is moving downhill backward at breakneck speed. And you hear these people say, you know, whatever they are. You'll hear people in debt, $50,000 that are making, you know, $20,000 a year. And you'll hear people making $180,000 a year. And both of them are as desperate and overwhelmed as the other. I mean, the emotion is the exact same. It doesn't matter how much, but you see these people call up and they actually followed the steps of the plan that I'm going to lay out for you here in a little bit. And then at the very end of their phone call, they will do a 3-2-1, we're debt free. And they will scream this out and crying and everything. It's nuts. But it shows you the labor and the commitment that they put into this, knowing that on the other side they would have freedom. And that's the goal, freedom. You don't remember Proverbs 22:7 I told you to highlight? The borrower is slave to the lender. The borrower is slave to the lender. And once people get a taste of freedom, it's like nothing else. The quote that I'm going to skip over this zero-based budgeting because I think I'm running short on time. The quote that Dave Ramsey gives, again, this is stolen. He says, if you will decide now to live like no one else, which means I'm deciding I'm not going to go out to eat. I'm not going to buy expensive things. We'll get into this a little bit later. But if you'll decide now to live like no one else, later you will get to live like no one else. And Kim and I have had friends here at the church, and I've been so impressed. There's been a couple of occasions where we've said, hey, church is out. Do you want to go get something to eat after church? And I remember being told, love to, it's not in the budget. And I thought, man, that is fantastic willpower. For them to know that, yeah, they'd love to go do something, but they know they've got to stick to this budget. I thought, man, it's very impressive to me. And I think that's tremendous discipline. And I think we'd all do well to have good discipline like that. Okay, we're going to get right into it here. This is where you want to get your pens active and make some notes, okay? This is the 7 steps to getting out of debt. I'm not going to ask you to raise your hands to see who has debt and who doesn't. I'm not asking you to raise your hands and say, how much debt do you have? It doesn't matter. It's between you two, or you if you're single, and the Lord. Number one, let's just go ahead and assume that there is this kind of debt that we talked about before. There's a fixed amount of income. There is a tremendous amount of debt load that you're carrying, and your wheels are spinning. Okay, you don't know how to get moving. Number one, baby. It's called the baby steps. 7 baby steps. Okay, and it's just like anything else with babies. They got to learn to crawl. They got to learn to step, and things go slowly. You guys know how to eat an elephant, right? One bite at a time, and that's how it goes with debt, getting out of debt. Okay, so here we go. Let's eat this elephant. Baby step number one is get $1,000 emergency fund. Save up a $1,000 emergency fund. Now, depending on your income, this can take a week. This could take a month. This could take 2 months. But this is number one top priority. It's an emergency fund, and you have to keep it liquid. And by that, I mean you have to have access to it should you need it. So whether you save $1,000 up, put it in a pickle jar, and put it, you know, in a cupboard or something. Make it accessible if you need it. Number two, do not touch it. This is an emergency fund. This is not a I'd like a new stereo in my car fund. or this is not a, I don't know, go out to a Cardinals game or something fun. This is an emergency fund. It's for emergencies only. And if you do have to use it, medical emergency, your car breaks down, brakes go out, you got to buy tires. If you do have to use it, you always refer back to step one, build it right back up to $1,000 before you proceed on to step two. Okay? $1,000 emergency fund, that's number one. Again, this is Dave Ramsey's baby steps, and I think they're very good, and he can point to tens of thousands of people that have used these and be disciplined about it and got their truck moving and up and over the hill. Okay. Number two, pay off all debt using the snowball method. Pay off all debts using the snowball method. I'm going to explain the snowball method. You guys have all made snowballs, right? We didn't have much snow this year, but on a wet snow, you start with a little bitty ball, work it around in the snow. You don't have to roll it very far, and that thing is turned. You ever made a snowman, and you roll that ball, and you get it so big you can't even lift it up on top of the other one, right? Okay, snowball method. It all accumulates. So this is. I'm getting ready to describe to you the snowball method for paying off all debt. First thing you're going to do is get your piece of paper, and you're going to list all your debts, smallest to largest. All of your debts, you're going to list them smallest to largest. Let's say you have three credit cards. Let's say one of them is a $500 balance, one of them you owe $2,000 on, and one of them you owe $4,500 on. Okay? And then you've got a car that's worth $20,000 or $15,000. Okay? Write them in order, smallest to largest. Okay? Say you've got a loan from your parents. Write it on there. Let's say you've got, don't put your mortgage on this, but I'm trying to think of other good examples of debt. Anyways, you get the idea. Now, in the snowball method, you start with the top one, the smallest debt. Okay? You pay minimum payments on everything else below it, and you start with the smallest debt, and you go after it with every penny you have. You go after it with a vengeance, and you attack it. Every spare dime you find in the couch cushions goes to pay off debt number one. Okay? And Dave Ramsey says, and you don't set foot in a restaurant unless you're going there to work for your second job, which goes back to work ethic. Okay? And that's just a restaurant is one example of wasteful spending. Okay? You go after debt number one, and you throw every penny you have. Keep your $1,000 emergency fund in the bank or in your coffee jar or whatever else, and you pay off debt number one. Okay? And the thing that's interesting about his philosophy, he says, you know, he runs into people all the time, and we may get into this in a little bit later, bless you. They say, well, I have $5,000 in the bank, but I am actually $30,000 in debt. And his first thing he says, get that money out of the bank, put your take $1,000 off of that, take the other four and start throwing them at your debts. Get that money spent, okay? We'll explain that in a little bit. But pay off that smallest one. Pay minimum payments on the rest till the first one's gone. Once you get the first one knocked out, go after number two. What you would have spent on number one now goes on number two and everything you can find. The other thing he says is sell so much stuff that the kids think they are next. Sell so much stuff that the kids think they are next. Okay? And whether it's yard sale, Craigslist, whatever else, look around, find what is unessential. Because what his interest is, and I'm not trying to quote Dave Ramsey as if he's the Bible or anything, but these are biblical principles. We've talked about some of these, and there's a lot of Bible verses that we're not going to be able to touch right now. But his idea is getting you unyoked from slavery, getting you free. Drop these weights, and he will tell you to make tough decisions. And so, for example, if you can survive, which we all can, if you've got a $20,000 a car worth $20,000 and you can use a $3,000 car to get from point A to point B, he says, sell it. Even if you take a little bit of a bloodbath on its value for what you can get for it, take that money, buy yourself a clunker or whatever else that gets you where you need to go, throw the rest of it at your debt. Get that debt knocked out one by one. Minimum payments on everything else. So after number two is gone, go to number three. One bite at a time. And the interesting thing about this, especially with credit cards, what are we tempted to do with credit cards and other debt? We want to pay off what? The highest interest rate. Okay? But he says, don't worry about interest rates. And the reason is that it's an emotional battle. And if you take on a big chunk with a high interest rate and you work and work and work and you don't seem to be making headway on it, you're going to give up. It's just like dieting. Okay? Okay, I've decided I want to lose 50 pounds. Is a lot different than, okay, I want to lose 5 pounds. Okay? So what the idea is, you get these little shots in the arm. Every time you pay off one, you know, you can fist pump or whatever. I don't even know how the kids do that. But you get that rush of adrenaline and you're ready to go after the next one. And the point is, once you get this snowball going, it's remarkable how fast it gets moving. Once you've determined there's really nothing in your life you really need that much, you don't need that car. It's pretty. It's got shiny paint. It smells good and everything else. Okay. That's keep those small victories. That's why you go smallest to largest regardless of interest rate. You pause all other spending, including savings. When you're paying off debt, everything that comes into your account goes right to paying off the debt. Pause your savings. Pause your investing. And the answer to that is, are you better off saving $1,000, making 1.5%? Or are you better throwing that money and knocking down a credit card that is charging 15% or something like that? Is that reasonable? Lifestyle change. You know, extra jobs, overtime, anything you can do to increase your income is going to speed up this snowball process. And the thing that he always brings on these guys that took his advice and said, deliver pizza. And he says, if you ever have a pizza guy come to your house at night, and you ask him how he's doing, and he says, better than I deserve. That's his catchphrase. How you doing? Better than I deserve, right? If you ever have somebody do that, you know that they're working this plan. And this guy left his family at home. He took on another job in order to pay off his debt. He says, when you have that happen, you tip that guy really well because you know what he's trying to do. But delivering pizza, extra overtime, do whatever you can to put more money in your pocket, not in your pocket, to pay off debt. This all has spiritual implications. I'm not trying to leave the spiritual behind. It's very difficult for a slave to a lender to support his local church and to support other ministries. Okay? You are not free. And by the way, and he would also agree, you should always continue to give to your church throughout every phase of getting out of debt, whatever you're able to give. And I think that's wise because it keeps it in perspective whose money you're really dealing with. Okay? You're not doing this for yourself. He said, don't go to a restaurant unless it's your second job. It's a lifestyle change. You compare it to a diet. In the same way that you wouldn't ask me how I got my chiseled six-pack abs, okay? You don't go talk to your friends who are leveraged up to their necks in debt to ask them financial advice. Getting out of debt is never popular and it's never easy. Just like these people that we asked to go out to eat, it would have been a lot easier for them to say, you know what? I know we shouldn't. We don't have it budgeted, but let's just swipe the credit card. But you have to have a lifestyle change. And that's the other thing that I forgot to mention. When you pay off debt number one, let's assume it's a credit card, he says have plastic surgery. Cut it in half. Throw it away. Cancel the card. No more debt. If you need something, try to find it in Goodwill, garage sale, Craigslist, that kind of thing. These are just little things to help. These are all part of a bigger picture. Like I said, you sell so much stuff that the kids think they're next. Is your car too much for your income? Is your house too much for the income that you make? Electronics, iPhone. Are these things in line with your income? Okay, baby step number three. You guys get the idea. Paying off all debt using the snowball method. Baby step number three is like baby step number one, but it's really amped up. It says save 3 to 6 months of expenses for an emergency. Emergency fund no longer is $1,000. It's now 3 to 6 months of expenses. So in the course of a year, if it costs you a total of $30,000 to live, you need to save $15,000 and put it into an emergency fund not touched for anything except for an actual emergency. This is once you're completely out of debt except for your mortgage. So essentially you save half of your annual bills. Medical, dryer broke, car broke. I do not need to upgrade to the next iPhone. I do not need to buy that new television. And we're all tempted. These sales, it's funny that Walmart, Best Buy, all these places knows us. They study our spending habits. They know us better than we know ourselves. And if we go into a store and we see a TV that's a $1,000 TV marked down to $550, our minds think, I just saved $450. And the actual thing we should be thinking is, I'm getting ready to blow $550. It's a mind thing. Do I need? And the answer is no. Okay. Baby step number four. It's invest 15% of your household income into Roth IRAs and pre-tax retirement funds. Startup savings. And without debt, savings can build wildly fast. I ran an investment calculator. Since I'm 42, if I put in, and you cannot invest if you're saddled with debt. It makes no sense. Okay? It does, even if you're making good money on your investment. If you're making 10, 11, 12% on your money, but you're paying 15% on a credit card, you're losing. You're losing. And most people don't realize that. But once your debt is gone, if I wanted to retire at age 67, and I'm 42 now, if I put $500 in and the S&P 500's averaged 11% for 70 years or something like that, at 11% at $500 a month with a meager down payment, you're talking almost $1 million, you know, $750,000, $800,000. That's not a long time. That's 25 years. Okay. So it just shows you how discipline and careful management of your funds can build to a significant retirement nest egg. Don't count on anyone else for your security or your retirement, especially not the federal government. Don't count on anybody else. Don't count on the government. Don't count on your kids, and don't count on your parents. One significant sick event, illness, can drain you dry, bleed you dry. Don't count on anyone else for your security or for your retirement. Baby step number five, save for your children's college fund, if applicable. The earlier, the better. But you got to get started because college is expensive. These are good practical things. Baby step number six is pay off your home early. Pay off that mortgage. Pay off your home early. And baby step number seven, the last one. Baby step number seven is build wealth and give generously. We're not talking about greed. We're not talking about the desire for wealth or to become wealthy, but to build wealth so that the Bible talks about, you know, let him who has give generously to those that do not have. And you cannot do that. You cannot be generous with somebody else's money. If you're saddled with credit cards, there's nothing generous about you going further into debt to be generous to somebody else. It's not wise. It's 2 o'clock, but I did promise we would go ahead and take some questions. I'll save some of this for next week. Before we do that, Kim gave me this financial fitness wheel. I didn't print it off for you, quite honestly, because I didn't have enough black ink, and I knew when I converted this to black, it was going to suck up a lot of my ink out of my printer. So I'm going to show it to you. Okay? It's a financial fitness wheel. Okay? And this pie piece, it's savings and cash management. And this is stuff like she goes over with her clients and stuff, just to help them get a big picture. You ever heard of the Whatby and the Whitby? Okay? Your Whitby is working in the business. Okay? Working in your family. And the Whatby is working on your business or working on your family. Seeing it from a bird's eye view. Getting up in the helicopter and looking down, kind of seeing this is what this view would be. Savings and cash management. Borrowing and debt management. Taxes. Estate planning. Investment and retirement planning. Insurance and protection. All these things are vital in a balanced financial profile. Taxes is one of those we're not even going to have time to deal with, unless Hamster would like to take a week to teach about taxes. I would love to sit in on that one. It'd be riveting. But I saw a meme, and I've tipped my hand before that I love memes, but the schools have failed us in a sense, I think, about not really teaching students the ins and outs of taxation. And I've got a meme on my phone that says, "I'm so glad in this something." It's referring to tax season, but it says, "I'm so glad I was taught about parallelograms because it's so handy in this parallelogram season we're in." Referring to tax season, it cracks me up. Apparently, I didn't bring that say it correctly because nobody is tickled as I am. Okay, it is hilarious, I think. But we learn about a lot of things that we don't use, and yet some things that are vital. I mean, taxes are vital. We don't teach our kids. So do you guys have any questions, any anecdotes, any stories or things that you've done?
I think one of the most important things a senior in high school should know is how to balance.
Kim would give you a high five on that. And it is.
They got a job and they got money and they got bills, but they can't.
Yeah. Can't balance a checkbook. Yeah, that's true. And it's not difficult. Even I could balance a checkbook. Yeah. Yes, ma'am.
Well, to touch on that, it's kind of funny because that's kind of how we started. We moved together, and, you know, Braxton, he was in the military. We weren't married. And so it was just when his paycheck would come in, whatever bill hit his hand first, that's what he paid. And he just paid it off, and then it'd be like, oh, well, our cable got shut off. Or our water got shut off. It's like, well, I paid the cell phone bill.
Cell phones are working. It's cold in the house, but we can talk.
So. That's kind of that's how we started. I was 18 and he was 20, and we had no idea what we were doing. And we were buying groceries with credit cards because they gave us credit cards, and, you know, nobody taught us about any of that.
Yeah.
And it took us 10 years to get out of that.
That's so funny about credit cards, because when I was in Lincoln Land, and this is way, I mean, they invented the wheel, and then next year I went to Lincoln Land. So, I mean, it's been a long time ago. But they had these credit card booths set up. in the main eating area down there. And my friends, they were standing in line to get credit cards. And I remember thinking to myself, I can't believe they want me for a credit card. This is the most amazing thing ever. You know, this is going to change my life, right? And honestly, it has changed a lot of people's lives. A lot of people they think to themselves, I'm finally independent. They see, and I worry about my kids because, you know, I'll swipe a card now and again too, which is a big no-no for Dave Ramsey, by the way. Don't use credit cards. Cut them all up. But I wonder, well, let me go back to real quick about cash is king. If his philosophy is never pay sticker price for anything. Pay with cash. And his philosophy is you should have an envelope for groceries with cash in it. You should have an envelope for entertainment with cash in it. You should have an envelope for whatever else. And when you go in, they've done studies, psychological studies, to show that there is actual, not physical, but emotional pain associated with letting go of cash, giving cash to someone else. And so what you have is there's the exchange. You give so much cash and you get something. Okay? You give a $20 bill and you get a bucket of chicken. Okay? There's an exchange that takes place. But when you swipe a card, you get your chicken, but you get your card back too. So there's no emotional. So, I mean, that's right up my alley, getting my chicken and my card back, right? But there's tremendous studies done on this about the emotional aspect of paying with cash. And the other thing is, he says, and we all know this, if you were to go in, and let's say you did save and buy a car with cash, he actually recommends, if you can, buy a house with cash. It's ridiculous to think about, I know. But if you go in and a car is $25,000, and they're going to plan on financing that thing for 7, 8 years even now, and you go in there with $20,000 in cash and put it on the table, they are not going to let you walk out of that car without keys in your hand. You know, it's just remarkable what people will do for cash. And so it's I'm not trying to get too far off the topic, but you mentioned something about cash and the emotional reaction about spending cash. It's hard to let it go. Somebody else had a question.
As a banker, I don't recommend going to your bank and asking for $20,000
cash. Yes.
I wish your check would work.
Yes, that's okay. Okay. What was just said for those listening online, as a banker, she says she does not recommend leaving a bank with $20,000 in cash because you may not make it to your car. Get a cashier's check. Okay, that's wisdom. Okay, thank you. Anybody else have any questions? Any comments? Any anecdotes? Yes.
You know, in a real way, the last three of the Ten Commandments, you shall not steal, you shall not bear false witness, and you shall not covet, really guide into what you're talking about.
Mm-hmm. For those listening online, Dad said that the last three commandments, you shall not bear false witness, you shall not covet, you shall not steal, are all applicable in this today. And I think that's spot on. Reminded me of something else I was going to mention there when you were talking about that. I've lost it. Anybody else? Yeah, go ahead, Bryce. If the Lord wills,
yeah, so
we'll go here and there. And,
mm-hmm. But I didn't realize there was a finance. He was talking about finance.
Mm-hmm. Very good. And you know, the reality is everybody in their life is going to do something stupid with money. You're going to make an impulse buy, and it could be the ruin of you. And some of these things we pay for years after the fact. And obviously we could all, yeah, Mom.
That reminds me of a situation when Stephen and I were first married. I think our first year, we had a vacuum cleaner salesman come, and you know, this is the only day it's going to be this price. You better buy it we vowed then, well, before that, we bought into a buyer's club where you could get your cars cheaper, your lumber to build your house cheaper, all this stuff. We never used it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, dumb young people. And then after that, we decided we would never decide on something that day.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you're...
So did you buy the vacuum?
No.
Oh, okay.
Even though it was his best friend trying to sell it to us.
Yeah, what was just said is that they made a vow to sleep on any big purchases before not being impulsive.
We bought that rainbow vacuum from my niece.
It was a neat thing. You could put your vacuum in it.
Vacuum salesman. We don't see many vacuum salesmen anymore, but you're talking about your friend selling you trying to sell you the vacuum. Kim and I had a discussion. She became a Pampered Chef consultant early on in our marriage, and you get a lot of pressure from your higher ups if you're a consultant. You need to have parties. You need to do this. You need to call all your friends. And it finally got to the point. I'm like, Kim, I think we've got all the Pampered Chef we need, and you're going to start losing friends left because honestly, we had other, and I'm sure you guys know people like this too that are trying to peddle their wares. Whatever it is, I mean, pick your poison. There is 1,000 things out there right now, but they keep calling you, hey, would you like to have a Pampered Chef party? And before long, it's like, oh, guess who's calling? Decline. You know, and that's the truth. You know, after so long, we've had enough of that. But I've kind of gotten off the topic. Anything else? And then we'll go ahead and close this up.
Just one more thing.
Sure. That's right. That's right. Yeah. And we talked about that. One of the first verses we ran is, you know, even as wealth increases, don't lean on it. Don't put your trust in it. Trust is in the Lord. You know, he can give and he can take away. And we need to be ready for that. You're right. So those are good words. And I honestly, it would be fun, not fun for you guys to rehash, but just hearing Mom and Dad, they've told us 1,000 stories. Dave Ramsey calls it stupid tax that we pay for making decisions that were not well thought through. And now you're looking back, you'd never do it. But it would be interesting for just all of us to get together and share stupid things that we've done. Purchases we made, impulse buys, that kind of stuff. And we could go on and on. We're not going to do that, of course. But we've all done it. But that's the beauty of it. You want to learn from other people's mistakes. So hopefully this was useful, and I hope I didn't veer too far off of the biblical course. I want to make sure that what we present is thoroughly biblical, and I do believe it is. I think I would encourage you to see what the scriptures say. I have a list, a website that has a list of financial Bible verses. I'd be happy to forward it to you if anybody would like to have that, and you can pick through them one at a time. But you know, you see all different aspects in the Bible about, you know, not loving money, not wanting money, and being content with whatsoever you have. You also see these verses that says a wise man lays up for his son's son. So there's all these. It's a multifaceted. The whole idea of finances in the Bible is a lot like a lot of other things. It has different aspects to it, and all are true. They're not contradictory. And so it's a matter of finding that balance and being good stewards. That's the ultimate thing. Being good stewards, being content. And so...
It's just like loving the ability to serve with it.
Mm-hmm.
If you're giving it away, it shows that you're not really loving it yourself.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. Loving you're not loving the money, the ability to serve with it, being generous. And... I'm sure all of you guys have given to somebody in need. It's a wonderful feeling. It is not a wonderful feeling if you're doing it to your own harm. You know, you're like, I know you know, Sally is on hard times and I'm able to give her this money and that's great. And then the next thing you know, a credit card bill shows up in the mail. And I could really have used that money that I just gave Sally or whatever name I gave her. I'm going to stop. We better stop. Let's pray. Lord, thank you for, thank you for your word. Thank you for counsel that it, and the wisdom that it provides. And Lord, we want to be good stewards of what you blessed us with. We don't want to be greedy, and we want to shed those things that are unnecessary, that and actually have delayed gratification and not just serve our belly. And Lord, we ask that you'll help us to be cognizant of our need to be humble and not to try to catch the eye of our friends and our neighbors and keeping up with the Joneses, but God, to put everything before your throne, because it's yours to begin with. In Jesus' name we ask, amen.